Live from Edinburgh, Radio Napier, news.
Good afternoon. This is Radio Napier. My name's Stephanie Abbott, and here's your headlines at 5 o'clock. A change in Scottish judiciary practices has led to the conviction of Ronnie Coulter, who was previously cleared for murder in 1999. A report published today has suggested that Scottish firms are optimistic about the economy following the Brexit vote. And just in time for Halloween, youths in masks have been harassing Morningside residents by throwing fireworks at doorsteps. A man has been jailed for a minimum of 19 years following a second trial for the murder of Surjit Singh Choker. Ronnie Coulter was originally cleared for the murder following the initial trial in 1998. However, following a change to double jeopardy laws in Scotland, Coulter has now received a minimum sentence of 19 years and 8 months. This is only the second time in Scottish legal history that the accused has been tried twice for the same crime. Announcing the verdict today, Judge Lord Matthew condemned the crime.
It is plain that your only purpose was violence and that you must have had a knife to hand. When the trap was sprung, you were not content to let Andrew Coulter use his baton on Choker, but you inflicted 3 stab wounds on his body in the most despicable and cowardly fashion.
Choker suffered 3 stab wounds, one which pierced his heart, resulting in severe blood loss. The incident happened following a row over a stolen gyro check between Choker, Coulter, Coulter's nephew Andrew, and another man, David Montgomery. I spoke with Amar Anwar, a prominent Scottish lawyer, who successfully represented the Choker family at today's trial, who gave an overview of double jeopardy.
The double jeopardy legislation came into force in November 2011. And basically it set out, prior to that, if you were acquitted of a crime at the High Court or in any court in Scotland, you could never be retried again for a crime for which you had previously been acquitted. Now, quite clearly under modern situations, what was found that new scientific evidence, DNA, people's allegiances changed, people might not have said something in the past might come forward, meant that it didn't make any sense that people should not be retried again. But the law sets a... It's set out in a number of limited situations where an accused can be retried for a crime in which they were previously acquitted.
He then explained what brought about a second trial.
Surjit Singh Choker was murdered in November 1998. 3 men were arrested at the time, Ronnie Coulter, Andrew Coulter and David Montgomery. Unfortunately, 2 of the men were released within a few days. Ronnie Coulter was then prosecuted, brought to trial in March 1999. He blamed the other 2 and was acquitted of the charge of murder. And then after a campaign being fought, the other 2 men stood trial in November 2000. They also were acquitted by blaming the first one. 2 inquiries took place. The case became notorious and was known as the Scottish Stephen Lawrence case. So the family literally stopped campaigning. And then 2011, there was discussions about changing the law. As soon as the law was changed, myself and the sister of the victim went to see the Lord Advocate. I applied to the Crown Office requesting that they reopen the case. And one of the arguments we used was that people's allegiances changed. In 1998, the Coulters were renowned as local thugs within the area. People were terrified of them, and people would not speak up. And we thought that as the years had passed by, people would have regret, people would have a conscience and would come forward. And the significant evidence was, of course, that individuals within the community wished to speak out. Members of their own family actually came to court and gave evidence and spoke about, you know, the fact that Ronnie Coulter had confessed to murder, he'd boasted about committing the perfect murder, he spoke about Surjit Singh Choker in racially derogatory terms, and the High Court decided all those an application for all 3 to be retried. It's a very high test that you have to succeed in order to get the application, and the High Court decided that only one person, there was significant new evidence, and that was Ronnie Coulter, and hence why he was retried and was successfully convicted, and today was sentenced to life imprisonment with a minimum term of 19 years and 8 months.
A proposal for a new facility for heroin addicts in Glasgow has also hit the news today. Nadine Schweitzer reports.
Members of Glasgow City Council, Health Board and Police are currently meeting to consider the approval of a controversial plan to install supervised injection facilities for heroin addicts in the city. The plan would see a pilot programme set up in Glasgow city centre with the aim of taking heroin addicts off the streets and into a safe facility. If approved, it will make Glasgow the first city in the UK to offer a legal space for injections. We spoke to David Liddell from the Scottish Drugs Forum about the proposal.
Certainly this is something that we welcome as being desperately needed for Glasgow and potentially other places in Scotland. In Glasgow specifically, there's in the region of 500 people who inject in public places. And obviously this proposal would seek to move that unhygienic, risky injecting in, you know, Glasgow back alleys, etc., into a controlled environment. People can and do recover from a drug problem, but they need, obviously and fairly self-evidently, to be alive to do that. And that's the crucial bit of these proposals, is that they're aimed at, first and foremost, at preservation of life.
A similar policy has been in place in Switzerland since 1994. Mittenreuter from Polyclinic Crossline in Zurich, a facility that provides heroin for addicts, gave us his personal opinion on how successful the policy has been there.
With this network, people are more or less stable, and especially concerning the weaker individuals in our society, I personally would say that we do have success. People theoretically don't need to do it in the alleyways anymore because they can get it from us, so it's a very big stress reliever. But it isn't the recipe for everyone. For some, rehab or therapy is better. For others, being given heroin is better. We can't say that it's the best thing for all heroin addicts.
Here are this afternoon's business headlines. The looming presence of Brexit has already had a profound impact on the Scottish economy, but a report published today by accountancy firm Grant Thornton suggests that it's not all bad news for Scottish businesses. The report found that Scottish companies have among the highest levels of confidence in their country's economy for the next 12 months, despite the vote to leave the European Union. This confidence comes in spite of less positive figures included in the report. For instance, 89% of Scottish companies doubt there will be an increase in exports over the coming year, despite the huge decrease in the value of the pound. A spokesperson for Grant Thornton, Debbie Mayer, explained that shifting political landscapes were one of the biggest challenges facing Scottish companies, and that Scottish independence was just as much a concern for the economy as Brexit. This statement supports another recent report that claims independence is a bigger threat to the Scottish financial sector than Brexit. The report by economists Jeremy Peat and Owen Kelly for the University of Strathclyde concludes that a special relationship for Scotland with the EU inside the UK would be the least bad of both worlds solution, however unlikely it may be. So, it seems that Brexit and the potential for another independence referendum look to shape the future of the Scottish economy for many years to come. According to a new quality report, the railway service between Edinburgh and the Scottish borders has been found to underperform in the first year since its reopening. Our reporter Matt has more on this.
It's been a year since the first train rumbled down the tracks towards Edinburgh. Millions of passengers have benefited from the reopening of the Borders Railway, which has overall been seen as a huge success. The Borders Railway Monitor report, published today, has found that 87% of the time during the last year, the rail service failed to meet ScotRail's target of arriving within 5 minutes of the schedule. I spoke to David Spavin, one of the authors of the report, about how he collated the data used to build the report.
Well, there's the website called Real Time Trains that's been available for a number of years. It's fully open to the public. They use Network Rail data to track the real-time performance of all trains on the entire British rail network.
With the problem's public knowledge, I reached out to ScotRail and a spokeswoman said,
Borders Railway has been an extraordinary success. We are now providing people with an alternative way of travelling to work, to visit friends and family, and to use for leisure. There have been some challenges, and we are determined to find the solutions that overcome them and see even more customers travelling on the line in year two and beyond.
Transport Scotland believes, with huge improvements planned, the problems aren't here to stay.
The ScotRail 158 fleet is currently undergoing a £14 million refurbishment programme, delivering significant upgrades to on-train facilities. As more refurbished trains are completed, they will be rolled out onto central belt routes, including the borders, next year, increasing capacity and reliability for passengers on the borders railway lines.
However, David Spaven believes that these improvements won't help solve the problems, as the trains provided are inadequate.
I think much of the £14 million refurbishment programme is to do with the internals of the Class 158 diesels, rather than being anything to do with the underlying problems with the Class 158s. They were poor trains when they were introduced more than 25 years ago. They're still poor trains.
With more improvements planned and discussions ongoing, there's no argument that the service has been a huge success.
In national news, the government has announced there will not be a review into the Battle of Orgreave. Families of those involved in clashes between miners and South Yorkshire police during the strike in 1984 were calling for a Hillsborough-style inquiry. The verdict was announced by Home Secretary Amber Rudd. Shadow Home Secretary Diane Abbott spoke out against the decision.
A six-page letter doesn't compensate for the violence and injustice that occurred at Orgreave so many years ago.
The former chief advisor to Nigel Farage has suspended his campaign for leader of the UK Independence Party only 3 days after launching his campaign. Raheem Kassam released a statement earlier today on his website, citing political pressures and financial restrictions as the reason behind his decisions. Four contenders now remain. New figures reveal that the number of young people seeking advice on anxiety has increased sharply. Data from the National Society of the Prevention of Cruelty to Children has revealed that nearly 12,000 counselling sessions relating to anxiety were held last year. Fears over the US election and Brexit are among the most common concerns raised. Sitcom Only Fools and Horses has been named as the nation's most watched television programme in a list that looked at 80 years of British television. The episode featuring Del Boy and Rodney finally becoming millionaires attracted over 24 million viewers.
Do you want to go first or should I?
Why don't we go together?
In the US, FBI Director James Comey has been warned by a senior Democrat that he could have broken federal law by publicly announcing an investigation into emails potentially linked to Hillary Clinton. Harry Reid accused Mr. Comey of violating an act which bars officials from influencing an election. Meanwhile, the Republican candidate Donald Trump has been using these latest developments to his advantage.
The FBI has found, you're not going to believe this one, this just happened, another 650,000 emails. How do you get to 650? I think that's called the mother load. I think they found them all.
More than 15,000 people in central Italy have been left homeless following the country's most powerful earthquake in 36 years. No one was killed in Sunday's quake, but 20 people were injured and there is extensive damage in and around Norcia's in central Italy. Tommaso De Longa, a member of the Italian Red Cross, described the damages.
It's one of the worst in our history, at least in our last 35 years. And it's almost the same area hit by the earthquake at the end of August. It started 2 months ago and never finished, unfortunately. On the other side, we are not speaking about dead or severely wounded people.
A German official who has been named as the next EU budget commissioner has drawn scathing criticism for a speech condemned as racist and homophobic. In his speech, Günther Oettinger caricatured a Chinese official delegation as 9 men, 1 party, no democracy, all with hair combed from left to right with black shoe polish. Critics say he is unfit for his new position. New Delhi in India has become shrouded in a thick, dark smog following the festival of Diwali on Sunday. Now, just days after the fireworks for the Festival of Lights, the celebrations, which included lamps, candles, feasting and fireworks, have sharply exacerbated the city's perpetual pollution problems. Here are the latest sports headlines with our sports correspondent, Kenza.
Manchester United boss Jose Mourinho is left awaiting a decision from the FA after United's goalless draw with Burnley this weekend. Mourinho was sent off on Saturday and escorted to the stands after he clashed with the referee who refused a United penalty appeal. With a long history of disciplinary action, the manager awaits the FA's decision over whether he'll be charged for a second time this week alone. Mourinho was absent from the post-match press conference, sending instead his assistant Rui Faria. Faria was asked about the incident between the manager and the referee.
And I don't think it's really important. I think what is important is what the referee will write in his report. The team did a fantastic work from the first second. We create many chances. Their goalkeeper was the best player on the pitch.
In Scottish football, Hearts have failed to take home 3 points for a second week in a row after a thrilling 3-3 draw with Inverness Caledonian Thistle this weekend. Police Scotland have launched an investigation into reports of sectarian singing on the train back to Edinburgh from Inverness. 15 fans are being sought by the police in connection to the incident. In tennis news, Andy Murray is chasing the world number one spot in the Paris Masters. Djokovic will retain the title unless Murray outdoes him this week, although the Scot appears to be on top form, coming straight from a victory in the Vienna Open. His coach, Mark Petchy, thinks achieving the title, considering his age, would make it all the more impressive.
I think it would be his greatest ever achievement, to be honest. I think John Newcombe, the only other player that's ever got to world number one past the age of 29, I think it would make him, my opinion, the greatest ever sports person in Britain.
In lighter and more local news, how does seeing into the future work? This year's Edinburgh Storytelling Festival comes to the end of its two-week run tonight. The festival has been held in venues all over Edinburgh, including the Scottish Storytelling Centre, the National Library of Scotland and the Royal Botanic Gardens. The festival featured over 70 storytelling events, amongst other magical topics. It delved into the world of what is known in Scotland as second sight, the supposed ability to see into the future. Vanessa Taff has this report.
It covered not just seeing into the future, it covered seeing things happening at the present, like perhaps thousands of miles away, but you would see them as they happened.
The voice of George McPherson, a storyteller and traditional bearer of second sight from Glendale in the Highlands. A veteran of the Scottish Storytelling Festival, George explored the phenomena of supersensory seeing in the Gaelic traditions of the Highlands and Islands. I asked him what storytelling means to him.
Well, it's been part of my life since I was 3 years old. I started learning stories when I was three, my grandfather, Snee, and I wasn't allowed to tell a story outside the house till I was 10.
Why?
And then I was allowed to tell because you were learning. You had 7 years learning. That was the old way of storytelling. After that, I was free to tell and collect. So it's been part of my life for well over 80 years.
George also spoke about how the festival has helped him to cultivate and share his gift and passion for storytelling.
When we started the festival in 1989, there was only about five storytellers involved. And since then, it's just grown and grown.
There's a big tradition in your family, from what we've just heard, of oral storytelling in your household. Do you feel like this is being lost in recent generations?
Very much. It's one of the sorrows that I feel, the amount that has been lost in the way of oral storytelling and second sight. But a lot of it isn't really lost, it's there, but people are afraid to use it.
While George believes people may be afraid to lose their storytelling abilities, the attendees I spoke with at the event were more than delighted to hear of George's unique gift.
It's such a unique experience.
I think it brings together the past into the future, and you can learn things from people of old to people of new.
I really, really enjoy the talk. It's obviously something that tourists can go to, but it's a very easy way for a tourist to be more than a tourist.
When I first walked up the Royal Mile on the way to the Storytelling Centre, I was totally transformed. The Storytelling Festival was really about crossing time and space, past, present, future, and bringing it all together.
Until next year's festival, I leave you with a piece from George.
There was a girl there who went for a lunch at the same time every day, and I said to her what I had seen, and I said to her, and you will see this, and you'll be a witness for it. And she laughed. She said, that'll be right.
Halloween has been a mixed bag for Edinburgh residents. Last night in the Pilton area, police received reports that youths in masks threw fireworks at doorsteps, blew up wheelie bins and harassed local residents. Inquiries are continuing to identify those responsible, and anyone with information is asked to contact police. However, it's not all tricks. So if you're a fan of fire breathing, acrobatics, painted nymphs and spirits, You will certainly enjoy the San Juan Festival, which is a 2,000-year-old celebration marking the changing of the seasons from summer to winter, and is said to be the last chance for the spirits of those past to say their goodbyes to the living. The festival predates Halloween traditions, such as guising, as children in Scotland would traditionally perform the play depicting the Winter King facing off with the Summer King on this day. Erin MacDonald is the festival organiser.
Samhain happens in Edinburgh on the 31st of October every year here in Edinburgh, but it's been happening, been celebrated by Celtic peoples since around about the 1st century AD. It starts at the Castle Esplanade, so the big space where the tattoo is normally held right in front of the castle, and then the courts of the Winter and Summer Kings process with their fire dancing and drums and mad costumes all the way down to right here, West Parliament Square. We're right outside the St Giles Cathedral, which is where you can hear the bells, and also our volunteer tech crew banging away in the background setting up our stage. So it's, the procession itself is really atmospheric and kind of creepy. It's just really earthy, that combination of fire and drums just feels really primal and quite mad and crazy and unlike anything else.
Erin MacDonald from Samhain Festival. That's it today for our headlines. I'm Stephanie Abbott, and top tips for tonight: wrap up in case of chilly weather and immerse yourself in the festivities and have a spooktacular Halloween from all of us at Radio Napier. For more information, please visit www.radionapier.com, and you can catch us on Twitter at Radio Napier.
This is Radio Napier.